If you have a Bible, please turn with me to James chapter 3. We finally made it to James 3 after a whole summer here. This chapter will go pretty quick. I'll cover most of it today. James gets into some really interesting things connecting basically our words, our speech to the gospel. And I think if this is familiar to you or even if it's brand new, a very, very challenging passage, very, very practical, concrete, specific kinds of things that he addresses here. I don't know about you, but probably for many of us, maybe our biggest like embarrassing moments, or maybe some of our moments of, boy, I regret that, have to do with things that came out of our mouth, right? Anybody here like that, and you said the wrong thing? Yeah, thank you for being honest. One person's honest in this whole church. Okay, you know, you said something, or maybe you got defensive, and man, you teed it up as high as you could and just went for it, and as soon as you said the words, as soon as they left your mouth, you're like, oh, I mean, you saw the look in their eyes. You saw the expression in the other person, just totally just devastating to that person, and no amount of, well, I'm sorry, I didn't mean it like that, you know, nothing you can do. You've had these moments, and sometimes intentionally and sometimes kind of by accident. If you've ever asked a woman when she's due, okay, and it's so exciting, oh, can I touch your belly? You know, and she's not due, okay, you know this feeling. that was awesome. We've all experienced this at one time or another. And James here has some things to say about our words, and particularly the ones we wish we could get back. He says in verse 1, not many of you should presume to be teachers. And he's talking about teachers kind of in a church context. My brothers and sisters, because you know that we who teach will be judged more strictly. We all stumble in many ways. Those who are never at fault in what they say are perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. So he has this first a word to teachers, kind of within the church. And he says to you guys, I guess he's talking to me, so I'll just talk to myself here for a minute. He says, you know, your words have influence, and so that's one reason you'll be judged. But the other fact is, you just use more words as a teacher. You're talking more, and so you'll be judged more strictly. Jesus, by the way, has a very, very sobering kind of line to this. In Matthew chapter 12, he says this. Think about this for a minute. He says, but I tell you that people will have to give account on the day of judgment for every empty word they have spoken. For by your words you will be acquitted, and by your words you will be condemned. Okay, let's just move on, because that is uncomfortable, isn't it? And so I'm not even sure fully what that means or what to do with that, but that's some serious words about our words. Proverbs chapter 18, verse 21 says, the tongue has the power of life and death. Tongue has the power of life and death. And he says, back to verse 2 in chapter 3 of James, he says, those who are never at fault in what they say are perfect, able to keep their whole body in check. And this would be kind of a Semitic expression. The whole body in check would be a way of saying you're able to kind of control your life. You're able to keep kind of your whole life on the rails, moving in the direction. However important you think your words are, they're actually more important than that. There's a deep connection between like our words and the course of our entire lives. And he goes on in verse 3, and he gives these three metaphors. I'm going to pause and kind of focus on them for a minute and kind of let them sink in, especially if they're really familiar to you. In verse 3, he says, when we put bits into the mouths of horses to make them obey us, we can turn the whole animal. He uses this example that's familiar to many of us. Put this bit, this little piece of metal, can't believe I'm touching this, in the mouth of a horse, and with this bit in the mouth of the horse connected to the bridle and the reins, with this bit in the mouth of the horse, you don't just control the horse's mouth, okay? You don't just control their head or their neck. You control the entire body. You control this 1,000-pound-plus animal because of this little tiny bit in the mouth of the horse. He goes on in verse 4 and gives another example. Or take ships as an example. Although they are so large and are driven by strong winds, they are steered by a very small rudder wherever the pilot wants to go. We've seen this. We know this example. A small rudder on high seas and strong winds determines the course of this enormous vessel. He gives another example. Verse 5, likewise, the tongue is a small part of the body, but it makes great boasts. Consider what a great forest is set on fire by a small spark. And of course, today we have like helicopters and aerial views, and you think about fires like in California right now, and just, you know, just spreads, and it starts with this tiny spark, small flame. From time to time, you'll hear of like, you know, a building burning down, or like hundreds or thousands of acres being destroyed by fire, and they'll find like the kid who started the fire, and it's like, well, what were you doing? Playing with matches, you know, the whole thing starts, just goes. Several years ago, I interned at a youth group, and there was a junior high student. I'll call him Rex, because that was his name. And I think it's been long enough. at some point, you just use their name. Rex was in his neighborhood with his friends, and they're pedaling around in like a summer day, and they drive past this house of a kid, and I don't know if they just didn't like this kid, or maybe it was their friend, and they showed love in weird ways, but he saw a car in the driveway of his friend's house with the windows down, and he decided, Rex, it would be a good idea to take one of these little, you know, those little black cat, little firecrackers, and just boom, that's it, just a little, not an M80 or whatever, just a small little firecracker, throws it in the window, open window of this car, and thinks it's going to be hilarious when it kind of makes the pop and, you know, the kid comes out to see what's going on. And except for what happened was, in about 10 seconds, he saw flames, you know, coming, the seat caught on fire, and literally, in 20 minutes, the car looked pretty much like this. He burnt the wheels off of it, just the whole thing, literally up in smoke, and he's just standing there like, I just threw my firecracker, you know, just totally, I mean, it was a big deal, and, you know, he got in big trouble, obviously. Likewise, our words have the ability to start fires that you can't put out. You can start with a little flame, a little word, a little phrase, a little kind of cutting remark, a fire that you do not have the ability to actually put out on your own. Where does this ability come from? I mean, James, Jesus, Proverbs, they're all trying to get us to see that our words have incredible weight. I mean, they have a ton of potential for either good or for also incredible destruction. So I think we can trace this power all the way back to Genesis, chapter 1. God speaks creation into existence. He doesn't think creation into being. He doesn't kind of act or maneuver it into being. He speaks, let there be. The theological language for this is words are the agent of God's creation. And then he creates humanity. He creates man and woman, and he gives us the ability to speak. And I'm not saying that we're God. I'm not saying that we're like God. I am saying this. You probably have more power than you realize. Created in the image of God with the ability to speak. Incredible destruction or incredible good. I mean, think about what your words have accomplished in your life. Words for you have shaped the course of your existence. For many of us, words kind of got us our job, right? Kind of got us the promotion. Words got you your husband or your wife or into that relationship. It was words. Words maybe landed you in jail. Some of us, don't raise your hand. Words maybe got you out of a parking ticket. I had to share this story, and it's kind of a tangent, but you'll appreciate this. Remember how last week I was talking about how we've all kind of behaved our way into stuff, and then we try to pray our way out of it, and I had that get out of jail free card, and my example, was when you're driving down the interstate, and you're speeding, and you pass a cop sitting kind of underneath the overpass, and you're like, please God, please let me out of this. Funny I should mention that, and apparently I have no ability to practice what I actually preach, but leaving church last Sunday, I'm on the interstate, and we're headed out of town to go on vacation, and I see this car, and I kind of get these other cars going like 80, and I've driven for 14 years, and I've never gotten a speeding ticket, never. Not that I don't deserve it. I'm just saying I haven't actually had the consequence of a ticket, and we're in this little pack going like 80, and I see this blue Mustang two cars behind me, and I even look in my rearview mirror, and I analyze it, and I think, there's no way. No, it's just a regular car. Just a regular car. And I drive like that, and I'm passing people, and I'm kind of like leading, and you know that thing where you're, yeah, okay, I'll go ahead of you, and now I'm really going too fast. And after 15 minutes, we exit up at Fairmount, and sure enough, he's behind me, turns on his lights, and the application here is words have a significant influence on, and I'm not saying, by the way, I didn't get a ticket, which is awesome. I'm not saying I talked my way out of it, but when he said, so why are you going so fast? My response of basically I'm an idiot and on and on and on, you know, had a little bit, it could have gone much worse, I'll say it that way. And fortunately, I got off. So I don't know what the point is of that, other than I should listen to myself, I guess. Your words, for many of us, have shaped our self-image, like literally our regard of ourself. And where does that come from? It's words. It's the accumulation of verdicts, of words spoken about you over years by people in your lives. You think about this, your parents, your teachers, people who've said things about you. And you know, we have that saying that you said when you were a kid, sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never. Yeah, we of course know that's not true. Of course we grow up and we realize, actually, what happens kind of to me is really very, very little in comparison with what happens like in me and shaping who I am and kind of the course of my life and how I view myself. And words are very, very heavy. It's possible to cause damage that no amount of I'm sorry can fix. I mean, I could stick you with a sword, right, and pull it out and say, sorry, you know, and but you have like this nasty wound. Some of you here are like, okay, you definitely don't have to tell me about the potential for words to do harm. I have burned bridges. I tell you, I had this one relationship and I had to open my mouth, and now this coworker, it's not the same anymore. It's caused incredible damage. And I've seen firsthand, I'm estranged with, you know, in this particular relationship because of something I said or how I responded in the heat of the moment with my mouth. Many of us know this firsthand. Others of us, though, are determined to learn this the hard way. And we somehow think that it's just words and, you know, like, you know, it's just a moment and that'll pass and now we're on and everything's fine. And all I said was, you know, and she went ballistic, you know. All I mentioned, all I happened to bring up was this one little, and next thing you know, a forest fire. You know, all I said was, and then that didn't work, so I threw another one on there. And I think I'll bring this thing up from the past, and wouldn't it be ironic if I really caused a fire right now? You know, my favorite one, I just decided to be, you know, to be really honest. I'm just going to say everything that I'm thinking, you know, honesty. It's a good thing, right? No, that's stupidity. That's go live alone, far away from all human civilization. See, many of us have experienced this firsthand. Think about this. Think about the damage that I could do right now with this little microphone, my voice being amplified to everybody in this room. I mean, literally in a matter of minutes. I don't have anything in particular in mind, but think of the damage that I could do. Irreparable, irretrievable. I mean, I could literally, in a matter of minutes, destroy this church. I mean, think about that. The power, you can get in your car after this service and with your mouth, tear down your family. Just devastate it. You can go into work on Monday morning, and in a few minutes, like, everybody's going to be on you, and in another 5 minutes of you running your mouth, you'll be escorted out the door, and another 5 minutes, you will never again work in that particular field. Think about, and it's not truth, it's words. Necessarily, it's just words and the incredible potential they have. And they have the power to destroy friendships, to erode self-esteem, to estrange members in a relationship. And then you move on to some of the bigger things, like murder, like suicide, like wars, which have all been initiated by words. James goes on in verse 6. He says this, "The tongue also is a fire, a world of evil among the parts of the body. It corrupts the whole person, sets the whole course of one's life on fire, and is itself set on fire by hell." Tell us what you really think, James. I mean, just totally lays it on as thick as possible. You know those war movies where somebody has a flamethrower? Have you seen those before? Kind of cool in movies. Here's what James is saying. You come into this world. You are born with your pilot light lit already. You come into this existence with this potential, and all you have to do is open your mouth. All you have to do is respond out of emotion or get defensive or make that. That's all you have to do, and people around you are getting like second and third or worse degree burns all around you. I know some of us, we have our stories, and it was like, yeah, but I was really angry, or I was drunk, or I inherited a temper, you know, from my dad, and it doesn't matter what the excuse is. Once it's done, there's damage that cannot be repaired. If it was anything else, this is interesting, if it was anything else besides our mouth like you'd have to be a certain age to get one in the first place. I mean, maybe like in Montana or Wyoming, they let 14-year-olds have one, but like everywhere else, everywhere else, you'd have to have a license, you'd have to get certified. I mean, it would be a really, really big deal, and it would be taken much more seriously than it's taken in our culture. Look at verse 7. All kinds of animals, birds, reptiles, and sea creatures are being tamed and have been tamed by human beings, but no one can tame the tongue. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison. I think if James were writing this today, he'd put a little parenthesis right here. It is a restless evil full of deadly poison, parentheses, and then there's email, right? There's something about sitting behind a computer screen and boy, oh boy, do I have all kinds of courage now that I'm, you know, in the safety of my home, typing whatever it is comes to my mind. So that's probably another topic, but we could bring that in as well. He says all animals have been tamed, and he doesn't mean that you can like house train like a seal. You know, that's not what he's saying. He's just simply saying there is no creature, there is no animal that poses a significant threat to the human race. And so in a zoo, behind bars, you know, on a preserve, behind glass, whatever the thing is, there's no animal that threatens us as humanity. He's saying just like that, the tongue, it can't be tamed. It's like that certain breed of dog that you think is good doggy, nice doggy, you know, and you turn your back for a second and just lashes out and takes these victims through gossip, through cutting remarks, through sarcasm, through half-truth, through spin, through exaggeration. What James is saying is this. Doesn't matter how old you are. Doesn't matter how mature spirit. Doesn't matter how long you've been a Christian. It doesn't matter. It doesn't take away the potential in our relationships for our tongue to be a lethal weapon. Doesn't matter. It's always there. 3 weeks ago or so, Liz and I, we moved basically across town. And we're in that, you know how that goes. And we're in that whole process. And the house we moved to is kind of off a busy road. And I'm driving this truck and a big trailer. And it's getting dark out. And I'm driving. My dad's in the passenger seat. And I pull up and I'm trying to back this trailer across the oncoming traffic lane. Okay, can you picture that? And it's kind of busy and it's at night. And so I'm backing this up. There's cars coming toward me that have, you know, slowed to almost a stop, and I back up, and as I'm backing up, the car that was front, you know, coming toward me, goes around my trailer while I'm backing up, okay? Not cool. And I, in the moment, kind of the heat of the moment, said, that something I'm not going to tell you, family-friendly show here, And it just made me so mad. And my dad, after I finally got it backed up, he looks over at me and he goes, did you just call that guy a, you know, and said, yes, I did, and I'm not very proud of that. Just, it can always pop up. It always has this potential to raise its head. Verse 9, we'll finish this passage here. With the tongue we praise our Lord and Father, and with it we curse human beings who've been made in God's likeness. Out of the same mouth come praise and cursing. My brothers and sisters, this should not be. How can you come and you sing these songs and Jesus and, you know, we pray in our small group, we do all these different things, and then we get out in the parking lot, and then it's a whole, oh, anybody else? Whole different story. How can this be? And then he asks these two rhetorical questions, meaning the answer is obviously no. Verse 11, can both fresh water and salt water flow from the same spring? No, I don't think so. Verse 12, my brothers and sisters, can a fig tree bear olives or a grapevine bear figs? Mm-mm. Neither can a salt spring produce fresh water. The end. That's it. And that's all he gives us. It's like, okay, you have a problem. People around you have, you know, burns. They're like your burn victims around you. You are a living flamethrower, okay? Okay, James, tell us what to do. I admit, okay, help me. Help me out. Nope, just done. It's funny that, I mean, James seems to be pretty content just issuing a very, very strong warning and saying, you've been warned. Now, I don't want to leave you like that, and there are certainly a lot of other places in the Bible that speak more positively to what we can do. You know, here's what we avoid, and okay, here's what we need to do. And so let me leave you with a few things. I already mentioned this proverb that says the tongue has the power of not just death, but also has the power of life. Let me walk you through three things really quick. We can walk away with this. Number one, I think we have to take responsibility for the words that we've spoken. We have to own up to the fires that we've started with our words. We have to go back and say, look, I'm sorry I've burned you. I'm sorry that you've had to kind of be on the other end of my mouth. It's not been fun for you, and I own up to that. And then here's the really, really hard part that almost nobody does. I'm sorry, and then, that's it. Not, I'm sorry, but when you, okay, that's you're just lighting more matches. You're just throwing more on. I'm sorry, and then, shut your mouth. That's it. We're done. There's something about going to the person that I think has the potential. I think we always have this sort of lethal potential within us, but something about trying to make it right. And with the really big fires, it's not even saying, will you forgive me? It's just saying, I'm sorry, and I understand if you, I hope you can forgive me, but I understand if you can't, I don't blame you. And then just leaving it to that person. And then showing them with actions that we mean it. There's something about going to the person, though, and kind of owning up that I think really cuts down on our odds of repeating that again, especially with that person. Quick story. I think I told this a long, long time ago, but when I was a freshman, and short version is this, it was like the second week of school in college, and I set off some alarm, okay, in the dorm, and long story short, it was like the first week, it was a door alarm thing, it was an accident, and basically, I felt like, and it was a $20 fine for setting this off, I felt like, while I was technically in error, that this would be a perfect opportunity for him to say, the RD, you know, the director, to say, look, I know you didn't mean to do this, okay, next time, you know. So I really felt like, but no, he stuck it to me. He said, you're paying the $20, and I was outraged, and I had my huge case for why this didn't, it wasn't the same thing, and I wasn't sneaking out at night, or, I mean, just, okay. So all that to say, he charges me this $20 fine, and I decide, because I'm so clever, to pay him in pennies, okay? And so I get this shoebox, and I know, it's a total jerk move. I get this shoebox, pennies, and then I write this one-page letter, the most caustic, sarcastic thing you would imagine anybody would be capable of doing. And it kind of ended with, like, a fan of your incredible mercy, Matt, you know? Like, that kind of stuff. I mean, it was over the top, just, and I hope he doesn't have this, you know, somewhere tucked away, because that'd be embarrassing. And I gave him these pennies, and of course he called me down. I put them on his desk, and, you know, I didn't want to give it to him in person. But so he calls me down, and he talks to me about it, and, you know, he's one of those, like, really kind of really nice guy, other than this one incident, you know, one really sensitive kind of personality. And, you know, I could tell it really bothered him, and we kind of just, you know, back and forth. And then he just said, well, can you at least, like, pay me in bills? And so I took the pennies, and I paid him, gave him a 20, and kind of moved on, but it kind of bugged me. Every time I saw this guy, I was just like, it's just awkward, sort of. And so it was a year later. It was the beginning of my sophomore year. After that whole summer, I come back, and I go to this guy named Mark, and I say, look, that was a jerk thing to do, and I'm really sorry, and I know you were just doing your job, and just kind of a rare moment of maturity for me, and went back and apologized. And here's the thing. To this day, not that I haven't used sarcasm or said things that I regret, to this day, I have never, in however many years that's been, used sarcasm as a weapon. I've never used it, like, intentionally sit down to, like, skillfully craft this device that's supposed to get what I want. Because it was just a whole year of me going, I feel terrible about this. And so my point is, go back, make it right, greatly reduces our chances of doing that again. The second thing we need to do is bring this into our relationship with God. I mean, basically, it's a daily kind of prayer. It's a daily kind of, God, I'm surrendering to you my mouth. God, I realize that I have the match, you know, to the edge of the box pretty much all the time. God, please remind me that this fire I'm about to light is bigger than my match. It's bigger than the matchbox. It's bigger than anything I am capable of putting out myself. So kind of bringing God, surrendering our mouths, which have, like we said, incredible power. And then the last thing is this. Remember, and I know James kind of takes it more negative because he's issuing this warning and that's his kind of agenda. But remember that words also have the power of life. Life and death. So I want us to think for just a few minutes. What are the relationships where you can bring life into with your mouth, with your words? Like, husbands, what do your wives need to hear you say out loud? And I know that you know, you kind of think it's implied and you have this mutual understanding and everything, but like, what do they need to hear you say with your words? Wives, what do your husbands need to hear from you? Out loud on at least a consistent basis. What do your kids need to hear from you? Like, I'm proud of you. You have what it takes. And what are those words that need to be spoken, especially if you grew up in a family where you didn't hear those yourself? And you kind of have these things you wish your dad, you wish your mom would have said to you at least once in a while. Okay, we'll change that. Do something different with your kids. What do your parents need to hear from you? And I know they're parents and they're not real people and they don't actually have feelings and all that kind of stuff. Our parents need to hear these things from us. I became a little more aware of this, I think, you know, when we started having kids. And there was a time a few months ago, I was laying down in Silas's bed, and I don't know where he got this. We don't, like, say this, but he patted me on the back, you know, kind of an open hand pat, like, I think this is how you do it kind of thing. He patted me on the back and he says, "Daddy, you're so nice." And it's like, I don't know what he meant, and I only assume he meant, you know, good things, and he probably didn't fully comprehend. But that was like, it doesn't get any better than that, does it? I was like, that is awesome. What'd you say? Do that again, my back. Pat on my back. What do our parents need to hear? How about your coworkers? And I know maybe where you work, there's kind of this culture of competition. And if I actually go out of my way to say something nice, then that is that giving them kind of the upper hand and kind of, you know, however, whatever. What do your coworkers, what about your boss? I know you look at your boss, he or she, and you think she has an inexhaustible source of self-confidence and esteem. But if you've ever been in a leadership position, you know how lonely it is. You know the self-doubt. You know the thoughts that come through. You know that I'm trying my best to do the right thing, but, you know, I'm the one leading this final, you know, comes down to me, and I don't know how it's going to go. I mean, you've experienced this, and so you know, and so be intentional about these people. Maybe you work for or look up to. Maybe someone who works for you. You know, it's weird. Not weird, I guess, but interesting. I mean, words have the ability to call things out of us that we didn't know was in there. Have you experienced this? Somebody said something about you, and when they said it, you were like, they don't really know me, that's not even true, but like they said it, and you kind of started to believe it, and it actually, you rose kind of to the occasion of the, has anybody experienced that? Like, you became better than you really were because something somebody put in your life, instilled in you, breathed into you with their words. Let me give you three quick examples, kind of from different points in my life, and then we'll be done. When I was in sixth grade, my parents, by the way, did a lot of things right and taught me all kinds of things that I really, really value. But one of the things that kind of wasn't a big value in my home growing up was, like, getting good grades. It was kind of like, just, you go do your thing, do your best, you know, you'll be fine. Just don't get in trouble kind of mentality. And so, you know, I was like a B, C student all through elementary school. And I get to sixth grade, and apparently in sixth grade, they start to decide, you know, what your classes are going to be, at least in my school system, like in seventh grade, what math you're going to be in, what English, you know, those are the two big things. And will you be like in the advanced classes or the middle or the remedial, you know, that whole thing, kind of setting you on path later in high school to be in the AP classes and stuff. My teacher, sixth grade teacher, Mr. Klein, called me out in the hall, said, "Matt, come out in the hall." And I was like, oh boy, now what'd I do? You know, and so he calls me out. I thought I was probably talking too much or something. And I go out there and he says, "Matt, you know, I know you get B minuses, C's, and that's kind of your thing. I'm telling you, you are an A student. If you would just apply yourself, and I can't because of your grades put you in this math class and this advanced English class, I can't do it, but if you would just apply yourself and work really hard your seventh and eighth grade year, by your freshman year, you'll be on this track and you can do this." And kind of just, it was like 3 minutes, go back to your desk, you know, that was it. But something that he said, because if you would have asked me, "Are you giving it your best?" I would say, "I think so." But sometimes you don't know what your best is. You don't know what your potential is because you haven't reached it. And so I just kind of took that to heart, and I took it in and just sort of made some changes my seventh, my eighth grade year and began working harder and thinking, hey, maybe I can do this. And I don't say this to brag or any kind of, that's ridiculous, but by my freshman year of high school on through college, I became an A student. And, you know, I had to take algebra and geometry at the same time to get kind of caught up and that whole thing. And you know, the grades thing, that hasn't made any difference in my life. that you know what has made a huge difference? How I see myself, how I view like that kind of determination and discipline. It totally changed the course of my life. And again, in another very, very rare moment of maturity, he would have no idea that that made that difference in my life, except for the fact that when I graduated high school, I called him. And like I said, that was out of character for me, but I called him up and said, I just want you to know the difference that that 3-minute conversation, I mean, it became a defining point in my life and how I saw myself and what I was capable of. Second example is this. I was a senior in college, a Christian ministry student, and one of the things you have to do before you finish is like take this preaching class and preach your one big hurrah sermon. And you know, I hadn't done that very much in my life. And you preach the sermon to peers, and they evaluate you and write it down. There's a couple questions. One of the questions on the sheet was, I see this person, speaker, preacher, in 5 years being, and kind of filling in like 5 years from now, here's where I see you. And I'm going through and I'm reading these, and this one guy, Glenn, who I still hate, just kidding. Glenn writes, and I can't really frame this very well, but you have to understand the context. And he said, and just believe me, this wasn't the nicest thing he could have said. He said, I see Matt in 5 years pastoring a small country church. And he didn't insult my mother or anything like this, and there's nothing wrong with small country churches. What he was doing wasn't very nice. And I took it, I was like, Glenn, you know. I get to the back, to my professor's evaluation. I still talk about Glenn to this day sometimes. Anyway, I've got no issues, don't worry. I get to my professor's, one of my kind of mentors, Keith Drury, and I get to his statement. He says, Matt, you remind me so much of, and he said the name of a person who's like this famous, like 10 years ago, was like a famous pastor, author. And I'm sure he was just being nice and just being encouraging, but I was like, wow, he thinks that about me? He thinks I have that somehow buried within that. I mean, I took that, another defining moment of somebody taking 30 seconds and writing something, again, changed how I viewed my reality, actually shaped who I saw myself as, kind of defined reality for me. Last example, short one. Every year my boss, Greg Paris, on my birthday writes me this little note, and it probably takes him 2 minutes to do it. And I'm sorry if you're on staff here and you don't get those notes. I kind of assumed everybody did that, but I guess now that I'm bringing it up and you're not. Every year, and I save these things. It's been, you know, seven years or so now. And just like a really specific, I appreciate this about you. You have what it takes. You matter. Stay on course. And it's just one of those things. Like this last one I got, I brought it home that day, and I was like, man, Liz, this is amazing. You have to read this. And just sort of these, wow. Who is in your life? Who's the person in your life that you are supposed to leverage your words and bring life to? You're supposed to define reality for that person and how maybe in part they see themselves, how maybe in part like the course of their lives actually goes, because you have that kind of power. I know it's scary, and I'm not trying to say God's not, you know, whatever, but it's amazing the power that God has given us as beings created in his image. Maybe a phone call, maybe an email, maybe a letter. Where can you use your words to bring life? Would you stand as we pray? God, we ask for courage, the person, the people that you're bringing to our hearts and our minds right now. Give us the courage to speak up. Please give us the courage to write that letter, to speak those words that maybe require us to swallow our pride or to kind of put ourselves out there a little bit. You've given us the power of life and death in our words. It's an amazing thing. God, for those of us who kind of have scorched earth in different areas of our lives, help us to go back. Again, we ask for courage to go try and make it right, to admit that we were wrong, to own up to the power and the damage, power of our words and the damage that we've done. God, help us to be sensitive to the words that we speak, to daily surrender our mouths to you, our speech. To kind of walk around at all times with this awareness that we can bring incredible, incredible pain or tremendous good. Help us to choose the latter. It's in Jesus' strong name we pray. Amen.